And one night, my partner's out sick, and it's just me. And a call comes in, and it's the usual crap. Broke her nose in the shower kind of thing. So I cuff him, put him in the car, and away we go. Only that night, we're driving into town, and this sideways asshole is in my back seat humming Danny Boy. And it just rubbed me wrong. So instead of left, I go right out into nowhere. And I kneel him down, and I put my revolver in his mouth. And I told him, this is it. This is how it ends. And he's crying, going to the bathroom all over himself, swearing to God he's going to leave her alone, screaming as much as you can with a gun in your mouth. And I told him to be quiet. But I need to think about what I was going to do here. And of course he got quiet. Goes still. And real quiet. Like a dog waiting for dinner scraps. And we just stood there for a while. Me acting like I'm thinking things over. And Prince Charming kneeling in the dirt with shit in his pants. And after a few minutes, I took the gun out of his mouth. And I say, so help me, if you ever touch her again, I will such and such and such and such and blah, 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 blah.
Just a warning.
Oh, of course. Just trying to do the right thing. But 2 weeks later, he killed her. Of course. Caved her head in with the base of a wearing blender. We got there, there was so much blood you could taste the metal. The moral of the story is, I chose a half measure when I should have gone all the way. I'll never make that mistake again. No more half measures, Walter.
Yeah, Walter. No more half measures. That's the way I feel about this struggle. No more half measures. We've been half measuring it for a long, long time. And half measures don't make it. Hey, it's the 13th of July, 2017. I hope you didn't go out and gamble all your money away yesterday on the 7-Eleven date. Well, it's still quite warm where I'm at. But I hear there's some pretty nasty weather in other parts of the country. Well, I think about everybody's got their donations in for this month. That's good. Few of you out there left, but we appreciate it. I appreciate it. Got to stop over at the post office today and purchase a few money orders for our good friends that are in lockdown. Got to get those out for this month. Just remember, even the lowliest nigger out there is going to get a parole before our boys get a parole. Just remember that. Don't ever forget that. I mean, put that in the back of your head and dwell on it and think about it, fester about it, and think about what you're going to do someday to even up the score. Be perfectly honest, I hope for prison riots. Yeah. Good prison riots once in a while clears the air a little bit. The only problem now is whites are in a minority in most of the prisons. And when you clean out the crummy ones and the drug-infested ones and the homosexuals and all that from them, there's still not many good ones left. I think ISIS is closing the door after the horse gets out. Or Daesh, or whatever you want to call them. The Turkish branch of Daesh has put out an e-book to train amateur radicals on the basics of guerrilla attacks. The 66-page Lone Wolf's Handbook includes information on subjects such as bomb making, truck attacks, property destruction, and so on, according to the Washington Times. I don't see anywhere listed where it says to give the take the battle to the ruling class and the billionaires. I don't see anything about that. That's strange. The manual also contains 174 illustrations and 7 charts written in Turkish. It urges readers to conduct guerrilla attacks against European and American cities. It contains detailed instructions for destroying cars and buildings and setting forest fires, setting highway traps and other subjects, and was released online via encrypted channels. Well, I can see all that as petty harassment, but I don't see that as a winning hand. But I certainly don't support their crazy Islamic situation. And I really don't think they do either. It's just a good excuse. If you're going to go out and raise hell, you got to have a good excuse. A video also released by Daesh called for lone wolves all over the world to stand up and to initiate attacks of any kind, unquote. That covers a lot of territory. The speaker in the video, a young teenager, called on the viewers to read and implement the strategies detailed in the book. While others, such as American white supremacist William Luther Pierce, Brazilian Marxist Carlos Meraghila, and fellow Islamic terrorist group Al-Qaeda have put out manuals detailing the how-tos of counterculture and radical behavior. Daesh's most recent entry in the genre of particular comprehensive and useful friendly targeting an audience of novices. Well, everybody starts out as a novice. The manual does lack some trademarks of Daesh propaganda. It lacks a cover page that was more roughly edited than previous entities. Daesh has gained a reputation for impeccable quality propaganda, including their own online magazine published in 4 different languages. Daesh's ability to control territory in Iraq and Syria has been crumbling since the group's 2015 peak. Well, you can't fight a very good guerrilla war in a country like that. Their Iraqi capital of Mosul has been completely recaptured by U.S.-backed Iraqi forces, while Daesh forces in their Syrian capital of Raqqa are completely surrounded by Syrian Democratic Forces. The territory they control continues to contract, and the organization's leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was announced to have been killed in a Russian airstrike by Russian, Iranian, and Daesh sources. However, even if the organization's ambitions of fielding a military and creating a government that controls territory are doomed, they may still prove a thorn in the sides of their many enemies as a more traditional guerrilla group. Yeah, they should have stuck to like the PLO. The PLO, until they got too big for their pants, was doing fine. Recent incidents like the November 2015 Paris attacks that killed 137, the March 2016 Brussels bombing that killed 35, the Berlin Christmas market attack in December 2016 that killed 12, and the trio of guerrilla attacks in the United Kingdom from March to June 2017 that killed 40 people between them have all demonstrated the effectiveness of lone or small groups of radical operators in wreaking havoc in European cities. Well, of course, because it works. It's guerrilla operations. ISIS tried to hit them head on, man. You can't do it. Can't do it. Daesh's online operations have been credited with inspiring guerrilla attacks in the past. For instance, they put out a video recommending the driving of vehicles like trucks and SUVs into crowds as a terror strategy in 2016. These things are all common sense. I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure these type of things. A couple of months later, a radical Islamist rammed a truck into a crowd of people in Nice, killing 87 and injuring 458. See, anything could be made a weapon. I said one time, somebody asked me, well, what do you consider a weapon? I said, well, if you can lift a refrigerator, it can be a weapon. Western leaders warn that Daesh may prove to be resilient. Well, if they go back to their guerrilla operations, just like the IRA and so forth. Well, of course they might prove to be resilient because guerrilla warfare is quite simple. It doesn't take brain surgeons. The South could have won if they'd carried on the war by guerrilla warfare like Jefferson Davis wanted to do. They threw in the towel. Can't ever throw in the towel. Guerrilla warfare goes on and on and on until you win. Whether I read this or not, Western leaders warn that Daesh may prove to be resilient. The fact that ISIS or Daesh has been able to absorb this much damage and yet still somehow continue to resist the coalition, albeit in weaker form to this day, and even more impressively, continue to direct, enable, or inspire terror guerrilla attacks around the world, should be a sobering and instructive demonstration of organizational resilience, quote Lieutenant General Michael K. Nagata, Director of Strategic Operation Planning at the American National Counter Guerrilla Center, said in a June interview. I often ask myself, and I mentioned it on the radio, I know back in the day that even before 9/11 and after 9/11, of all the things that these ISIS could do in this country or Europe, they weren't doing any of that stuff. They really weren't that professional. Not in my mind. And then when they tried to take on the might of the U.S. military and other militaries head on, I knew they were screwed. I'm certainly happy that Dr. Pierce got credit on the Lone Wolf page. That's great. Rumors persist that the order had contacts with the Arab groups. I don't know exactly how much or what for, but that's what I heard. See what Big Brother's up to. The Associated Press style book, published by the Associated Press to provide reporting and language guidelines for journalists, has released a 2017 version that instructs journalists to refrain from using terms like pro-life, migrant, refugee, Islamist, and terrorist in their writing. In her July 9th article, How the AP Style Book Censors Pro-Life and Other Conservative Words, published in The Hill, Rachel Alexander points out the obvious bias in the AP Style Book. More often than not, the style writers have been more interested in censoring conservative words while promoting language that liberals tend to favor, said Alexander. That's been especially true of the AP style book published by the Associated Press. It's unfortunate because that's the guide most journalists rely on. You can imagine how the words they want to use against us. Alexander points, that's why you always have to be a white supremacist. They won't say any other word, white supremacist. Well, that's the way it's planned. Alexander points out that the style book instructs journalists to change pro-life to anti-abortion because the AP style book says to use anti-abortion instead of pro-life and pro-abortion rights instead of pro-abortion or pro-choice. The style book also says to avoid using the term abortionist because it connotes a person who performs clandestine abortions. When it comes to words regarding terrorism, the style book instructs journalists to use the term militant or lone wolves or attackers instead of terrorists or Islamists. The style book also suggests that instead of using the term migrant or refugee, people struggling to enter Europe should be used. Yeah. In addition, the style book deems the terms illegal, immigrant or alien, and undocumented as unacceptable. The mainstream media claim that it's not biased, but it's got this bias built into its own words. And we're seeing these words increasingly scrubbed from the news articles and replaced with politically correct words instead, Alexander said during a Fox and Friends appearance on Tuesday. It's a bias against conservatives. It's getting worse every year. It's all right to be biased against racial separatists, white nationalists, and whatever. That's different. They can call you anything they want. There you go. You're in the book, boys. You're going to be white supremacists forever. Well, now I'm going to play back a talk I gave back in 1996. See what you think. Have I changed much? You'll see.
Operator, this line takes no collect calls. No operator, no collect calls. Do not leave personal information on this line. There is no such thing as a safe line anymore. Contact WAR by mail. Remember to tape these messages to share with other Aryan activists. This is WAR, White Aryan Resistance. I'm Tom Metzger, your host. WAR email address is metzger@cts, that's Charlie Thomas Sugar, .com. Our anti-Asian invasion line is 415-979-5806. Dial a racist number nationwide is 900-336-2020, extension 573. That's $2 a minute maximum.
Ignore those phone numbers.
4 minutes. Do it. Spread the word. Let's get that number around. Is Race and Reason TV on your cable system? If not, contact us and see how simple it is for you to put WAR's Race and Reason half-hour TV show on your cable system, either in three-quarter-inch format or half-inch at no cost to yourself except mailing back the tapes. The date is May 12, 1996, Aryan Mother's Day. WAR honors all Aryan mothers on this day. May 21st is the birthday of Bruce Pierce, Order Member, POW. His address is in our WAR paper. Send him a birthday card and a few bucks via postal money orders. You cannot send anything but postal money orders to men in prison. And tell him WAR sent you. Also, May 21st marks the start of the Lewis and Clark expedition to map the Northwest Territories in 1804, which did lead to the move of the white race west. Thursday, May 16, marks Admiral Byrd's flight to the North Pole. It's not too late to get a 1996 Aryan calendar, $15 donation. From the book bin, we have a few copies of In Hitler's Shadow left. This is the sad story of how the Katzenjammer Jews, with the offer of big finances, infiltrated the German Nazi Reich. The movie that's available in video stores, the title is Infiltrator. Hardbound, 275 pages and pictures, $20 donation. So much for those who claim they could spot a Jew anywhere or smell a Jew anywhere. Another recent find, we only have two copies, is Dawning of the Pagan Moon. Dawning of the Pagan Moon by Burnett. 288 pages of pagan history and up to the present information. Ward does not endorse some of the positions in this book, but it is an interesting overview of paganism past and present for a $12 donation. But we only have two of those left. Also, we have one copy of The Bitter Harvest, the graphic story of the life and death of Gordon Call, who was the forerunner to Robert Matthews and many other Aryan activists. 274 pages, hardbound, $15 donation. Subscribe to North America's most racist, irreverent, and seditious newspaper full of offensive cartoons, $30 per year or $3 per issue. U.S. postal money orders preferred. To John Metzger, Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92088. Our June issue will be multiple copies of a new four-pager for distribution. War needs your order for bulk copies of this to-the-public type four-pager in by the last week in May. $100 per thousand includes shipping, but you must make your order prior to the printing time, which is May 30th. Let's go. The first question is, what's up with Gerhard Lauck? Answer, War wishes to make one thing understood. Lauck's fake German accent and attempts to look and dress like Adolf Hitler is silly and counterproductive. His living in the past of the Third Reich is not what Adolf would promote in 1996. Now that you've got the negative, I'll give you the positive. Beyond that, however, we do support anyone of the Aryan race who does their best to fight international Jew terror and oppression. Allegedly, Lauck has denied the Holocaust as such. In Germany, it is against the law to do that. It does not appear to be against the law to say, yes, it happened, and I'm glad it did happen, and too bad it couldn't have been more. If it had happened, we would not be in the trouble we find ourselves in today. When will Aryans face the Jews straight on and spit in their eye instead of backing down and stuttering about the Aryan judgment of World War II? Simply say, I don't care. My concern is with my people. Let the Jews fend for themselves. That's their problem. Lauck went on trial Friday in Bonn, Germany. It is obviously a show trial to satisfy Jew and Judeo-Christian vengeance against any so-called Nazi sympathizer. Don't be silly by sending cards and letters to your congressman, your senator, your ambassador, or the German embassy. There's only one thing Germany fears, or any other country that has a lot of capitalists in it, and that is the loss of profits. If men carrying signs marched up and down before a Mercedes-Benz dealer saying, support Nazis, buy Mercedes-Benz, it could have an effect. Or a slip of paper inside German new cars that says, built by neo-Nazi worker number 8888. Let your imagination be your guide. Business is always vulnerable to adverse publicity, but the straight-on approach won't work. Use the deception and the guile of the Jew for a change, yes. Then sit back and enjoy the fun. It's surprising what can be accomplished with little resources, but a lot of Aryan brain power. Operation Johnny Appleseed is off to a good start. War is informed that the holy swastika is appearing everywhere. Michigan is running strong, even remote islands like San Juan Island off Seattle, Washington. Upstate New York is heating up, too. Thousands of small paper swastikas are being reported along the streets and in front of buildings of cities all over the country. This symbol has transcended politics to the level of faith or religion. That being so, the zealots of a new faith are proud to spread their venerated symbol far and wide, the symbol that incorporates all our enemies' hate. It is a very good luck symbol for Aryans and a very bad luck symbol for Jews and their Aryan traitor friends. Gas-filled balloons with swastikas have been reported in some cities floating to the earth from the sky. No, they're not filled with Zyklon B, boys and girls. You wish. It's summertime and time to pass on good tidings of the new Aryan Order. How about it? Balloons, felt pens, copying machines, stickers, forward march! Sunday the 12th on 60 Minutes on CBS TV, there may be an appearance this week by Dr. William Pierce of the National Alliance. If it's not this week, it probably will be next week. Perhaps one night this week, watch for Tom Metzger on the Lair Report. That's what used to be the McNeil Lair Report, carried by PBS Network. After the report, an internet debate will take place with yours truly. Watch for it. Also, last Monday started the trial, the civil trial, of Morris Dees suing Dr. William Pierce of National Alliance for the alleged illegal transfer of property from COTC to the National Alliance. That trial is expected to take about a week. Moore completed a series of interviews with Brazilian TV, both in California and Oklahoma last week, plus another interview on San Jose, California TV about the Internet. A symposium was held at Cal State Northridge in California last week by the Anti-Defamation League, at which our war agents sat in. Results: less than a dozen people showed up, and the conclusion was that all the kikes could do about racism on the Internet was educate people and whine. Of course, the more they educate, the more people will wish to take a peek at the naughty, racist websites. This, of course, serves our interest. The Jews are in a no-win spot on the Internet controversy. It is a catch-22 situation which we love to see Jews in. Alabama will start putting women on the chain gangs. A majority, of course, will be black, which should lead to some interesting debate. Time magazine of April 29th makes it official. After four decades of race-mixing struggle, America has now given up on school integration. A four-decade effort is being abandoned, as exhausted courts and frustrated blacks dust off the concept of separate but equal. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a landmark admission that after spending billions on forced race mixing, it is a failure in the schools. Racism is still very much alive in the U.S. and growing stronger. Admittedly, timid whites use a whole new code word vocabulary, but the fact remains we are beginning to turn the corner, whether you believe it or not. I know when you look around, it's very depressing. But this admission means that we have fought them to a frustration and a capitulation. Now we must redouble our efforts at every level as our engine picks up steam. A new book entitled Women of the Far Right by Glenn Jeansalm is on the stands. This book should be a goldmine of information on Aryan women, heroines, who even in the middle of World War II were still lobbying to stop the fratricide among whites and expose the Jews and their friends. Another hot book that is causing a furor in Germany is Hitler's Willing Executioners by Jonah Goldhagen. Subtitle: Ordinary Germans and the Jew Holocaust. This book, even though written by a Jew, puts to rest the silly notion that most Germans didn't know what was happening to Jews. Actually, even if they didn't know, the most important thing is they didn't care. The bulk of the Germans hated the Jews and didn't care what happened to these parasites. Whether by gas or just deportation, the German people wanted the Jews out, and they should never apologize for it. World Jewry declared war on Germany in 1933, and war means a fight to the death. Jews that died were simply soldiers in an international Jew army, whether that was civil, commercial, or military. The adults of that army were responsible for the deaths of their own children, as any other nation in defeat throughout history has suffered such problems. Until the Germans come out of denial and smell the coffee, they will continue to be bled white by Jews. Holocaust denial only prolongs the agony.
If the bulk of Germans had not wished a final solution, there would have been none. The new attempt by Jewry to raid Swiss banks for alleged billions in accounts is amusing. Old Aryan money of Europe must lock horns with another Jew shakedown without seeming anti-Semitic. It will be interesting to see how far the rich capitalists, for the most part Aryan bankers of Switzerland, will go to appease the Jews. My guess is not too far, since the Swiss banks are the heart of Europe's old Aryan money. Question: why don't Americans respond to the Asian immigration threat? Answer: because they see them as a better alternative to Negroes and mestizos. They watch too many movies about clean, smart, thrifty, and moral Asians, much of which is crap. Aryans, for the most part, do not understand the Asian fixed smile that is on their face when they deal with non-Asians. That smile is very misleading and clever. This makes Americans very susceptible to Asian plots. Of course, every gook that's here should be smiling, since he or she knows what he or she wants and is going after it. And it is everything you have, stupid American non-Asian. So when the blacks riot and burn down Asia Town, don't get excited. It's the best thing that could happen. Question: what do you think of anarchists? Answer: anarchism, unfortunately, like all other titles like liberal, conservative, and so on, have virtually lost their original meanings. Today we find a majority of anarchists involved in left-wing causes, most of which do as much to build a superstate as conservatives or liberals, and most anarchists I've heard don't sound like Bakunin or Kropotkin at all, at least the books that I've read, who I presume are saints in the Church of Anarchism. Yeah, Kropotkin and Bakunin. I see very little politics of the deed coming from modern anarchists like those of old. Their only deeds they do is want to run out in the street and fight neo-Nazis. I think anarchism has some very sound points and some points that are definitely not. True anarchism is not understood by most Americans, and the phony leftist leaders of anarchism today will see to it that it never becomes a real threat to the system. It appears to me that more true anarchism is seen on the right today than on the left. Randy Weaver and the Waco crowd represented many aspects of anarchism as I understand the word. I do not see anarchism as beyond Aryan debate, but a welcome part of the chemistry and debate. Question: what's the oil problem? Answer: there is no oil problem, only an oil monopoly problem among the big boys' private club of oil. Question: what's with Elohim City in Oklahoma? Answer: warning, stay clear of this place. There are some good people there, but it's a catastrophe waiting to happen, complete with government informant Jim Ellison close to the top in command. You have been warned. Question: some of the right wing call you a racial Bolshevik. What do they mean? Answer: technically it means nothing, since Bolshevik simply means majority. In Russia, the Reds were divided by the Mensheviks, which was the minority, and the Bolsheviks, who were the majority of the communists. Since I see various good points both on the right and the left, and am not squeamish about discussing these points, the decadent old right attack war. Also, since I say the Night of the Long Knives, in which over 1,700 loyal National Socialists in Germany were slaughtered, was a tragic mistake, this rubs the rabid right the wrong way, at least the rabid right of the neo-Nazis. Even Uncle Adolf in later years was quoted when they asked him about the Night of the Long Knives, quote, "I have stuck the wrong pig." There's also a cult in this country that attempts to raise Uncle Adolf to a god state, to which I object and consider all who gave their lives to raise a nation to be respected highly but not deified. Most who spend their time in this National Socialist cult syndrome actually accomplish almost nothing else. It's 1996, not 1938, and we must move on. That is why some call Tom Metzger a racial Bolshevik, attempting to infer that I am some sort of a communist because I don't toe their cultish lines. Because also I put the words into action, I don't sit around burning incense. Comment: Matt Duffy was a white power DJ from Massachusetts that was fired for practicing free speech and free music. I believe he transmitted there from a college campus. Question: is Ultimate Fighting a sign of the return of the Aryan warrior? Answer: you betcha, Red Rider. Straight boxing is pretty lame compared to Ultimate Fighting. Many Nazis and racists are into kickboxing, and the world champs are from Holland and France. They've totally taken away the sport from the Asians and are running it now. Very few Negroes ever make the grade in that type of violent competition. The more violent the action, the more Aryans will come back into the arena. That's right. The most violent of men on this earth are white Aryans. Give them a chance, and they'll come back in, as long as it's not a fixed game. The day of the Aryan is at hand. As we become smaller in actual numbers worldwide, we become more determined and more violent and more fanatical. Just like the Jews and Morris Deeds have said, and that's true. The fewer there are, the more radical we get. Comment: Mike Savage of Savage Nation Radio, San Francisco, is a Jew. That has been established, which shows how well Jews can play both sides of the fence, right and left. You notice a lot of Jews now climbing onto the right side? It's all smoke and mirrors, ladies and gentlemen. Question: is Morris Deeds Jewish? Answer: since he has every attribute of a Jew, he is a Jew, the same as millions of Aryan Judeo-Christians are Jews by simply adopting a Jewish mindset. If you think like a Jew, act like a Jew, you are a Jew, no matter what color your eyes or hair or your skin. My old saying is, everyone's a Jew until proven innocent, unquote. Question: is New England totally lost to the Aryans? Answer: no area is totally lost as long as one determined Aryan fights on. Aryans have always been most vicious when their back was against the wall. We will not give up New England. It would be better to export Manhattan with all the Jews on it out of the country. Question: would you do our press interviews for TV or radio over the phone here in Maryland? Answer: I'll be happy to be spokesman for any group or lone wolf to the press who asked me to do so. If you wish to stay in the shadows, that's fine and probably smart, and I recommend it. Just let me know and have them call me. Let me know what's going on, and I'll be your spokesman. And if I don't do it the way you want me to do it, call me back and criticize me. I can take it. Comment: the Republicans are coming to San Diego in August for their big old convention. Put on your Aryan thinking caps, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to make one of our rare appearances, maybe. Remember, the convention's only going to be about 10 miles from the Mexican border. The mestizo outrages will be peaking about that time. Holy pinata, what an opportunity. Beware, however, every informant in the entire region will be working the streets trying to figure out some way of screwing Aryans on anything we do in the streets. San Diego County has a hair-lipped Jew sheriff who loves Aryan blood. The San Diego City police chief is no better. Question: how would an Aryan nation treat Down syndrome? Answer: first, eugenics would be the first order of business. Major efforts to eliminate birth defects go hand in hand with eugenics. It is my belief that once race mixing is stopped and eugenicist programs introduced, over 90% of birth defects would be gone in a couple of generations. Down syndrome babies should be euthanized or aborted by early detection. I have seen no evidence that a Down syndrome child could be anything more than a drain on the family and the race in general. I remember for those Republicans out there, this week the Republicans voted to ease adoption regulations, making it easier now to adopt non-white kids, now that there's hardly any white kids to adopt, and to outlaw same-race regulations, which kept the blacks with the blacks, whites with the whites. Also, the Republicans are promoting a voucher system so Project Negroes in the city can invade your neighborhoods more easily. These two moves easily make the Republican Party even worse race traitors than the Democrats. Think about it. And you think that your answer is in the Republican Party or with the conservatives? Don't be a fool. Order, subscribe, or write Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92088. Don't forget Operation Johnny Appleseed. It's time for Aryans to move forward. The time is now. Leave the decrepit right to the grave. This is war.
You know, Southern California used to be the avocado center of the country. Millions and millions of dollars worth of avocados were raised right here in actually San Diego County. But what happened? NAFTA. They moved all the trees and planted all over Mexico. And now Mexico's got the avocados. And recently they've been selling for about $20 a box. So here we go, how which president was screwed us on NAFTA? That was Clinton, wasn't it? I'm going to play a little Max Kaiser. He's down in Mexico City. And I think he's going to talk about some of this.
This is the Kaiser Report. Yeah, we're still in Mexico City. We tried to leave, but said, you know what? Why bother? This is where it's all happening. Food's great. People are great. Crypto's great. It's all great. Stacey's great. Make Stacey great again. She's already great. Holy moly. What's going on, Stacey?
Just when I thought we were out. Oh, it's...
Holy, you know what? Not holy moly, but holy mole.
Yeah.
Huevo mole.
Well, I can't do that because my cable system is acting up and I'm getting quite a bit of breakup. The cabling in this area where I'm at is quite old and eventually it's going to have to be replaced. But in the meantime, I have to pick and choose what I run. Well, we'll run a little of the Jesus Never Was here. You boys need to hear this once in a while if you're wasting your time in religion, anything but racial religion.
Legend of Jesus.
Gospel writers know the stories that they were telling. Were the writers themselves witnesses to the events they describe? Had they perhaps been told of these stories by somebody else? Or are they entirely made-up stories? When I first heard the Jesus stories as a child, even then I wondered, how did the writers of these stories know the events that they were relating? It was all very well if it was an incident with Jesus and his disciples, but many of the important stories were occasions when there were no other substantial witnesses. For example, it is doubtful who was around for the baptism of Jesus. But the story that troubled me most related to the
gospel writers know the stories that they were telling. Were the writers themselves witnesses to the events they described? Had they perhaps been told of these stories by somebody else? Or are they entirely made-up stories? When I first heard the Jesus stories as a child, even then I wondered, how did the writers of these stories know the events that they were relating? It was all very well if it was an incident with Jesus and his disciples, but many of the important stories were occasions when there were no other substantial witnesses. For example, it is doubtful who was around for the baptism of Jesus. But the story that troubled me most related to the so-called temptations of Jesus, where in a series of little encounters with the devil, Jesus is first challenged to turn stones to bread. He is then invited to cast himself off the pinnacle of the temple and have angels save him. And finally, he was taken to a mountaintop and offered all the world's countries. Now, what troubles me here is there is no suggestion that anybody else was accompanying Jesus. There was nobody else out there in the desert, was there? There was nobody else taken to the pinnacle of the temple. There was nobody else on that mountaintop. How on earth did the gospel writers know such stories? Now, I've asked this question of Christians, and the most plausible response I've ever had is, well, that's what Jesus spoke about as he led them about the wilderness. He must have on one occasion have said, "Hey guys, guess what happened when I first got into the Messiah business? There I was on earth, and the devil came along and took me up to the mountaintop." Can we believe such a story? I don't think so. But this problem of having an authentic witness gets worse. The three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all tell a version of the final meeting of Jesus and the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, the problem here is that the disciples continuously fall asleep, and Jesus chastises them for this dozing off, and then goes off to pray. So the disciples are sleeping, and Jesus is praying. The Gospel writers recalled the words of three prayers of Jesus. Luke even intrudes the appearance of an angel, all while the disciples sleep. Now, immediately after that incident, he gets identified by Judas and arrested and taken off for his trial and crucifixion. At no point does Jesus gain the opportunity to regale the fact that he was in the garden praying while they are sleeping. There are no witnesses to that event. What can and has been invented is the dialogue given to Jesus as he prays in that garden. It's just another fantastic story, another ripping yarn from the New Testament. Judging from my mailbox, many believing Christians are very aware of the criminal history of the church. But they excuse themselves from all complicity. The perpetrators of individual cruelties, mass abuse, and wars of genocide and conquest were, it seemed, not real Christians at all. Real Christians could do none of these things because Christ, we're told, taught a message of peace and love and humility, even poverty. If only the church had followed the message of Jesus, none of those centuries filled with bloodshed and suffering would have unfolded the way they did. So by a quick sidestep, today's Christians wash their hands of any and all crimes, misdeeds and follies of their forebears. But let's take a closer look at this, because it is mighty strange that for more than 15 centuries and across all the world's continents, self-styled Christians have willfully or unwittingly misunderstood the message of their Lord and robbed when they should have given, punished when they should have helped, and murdered when they should have loved. So why have Christians always got the message wrong? Could it be that the message is rather less straightforward than many of today's more humane Christians naively imagine? Christians, that is, civilized by science and secularism. But let's consider Jesus himself. Jesus preached an absolutist belief of good and evil, with no shades of grey. "Whoever is not with me is against me," he says. Those who believe will not be damned, but unbelief arouses his anger, his impatience, and his utter abuse. In Luke 19:27, Jesus calls for the murder in front of him of all those who refuse to worship him. Jesus pours forth a stream of invective He threatens insatiable revenge, outer darkness, and an eternal punishment, explicitly stated at least 30 times. You love your neighbour as yourself, but only if he receives the good news. If not, shake off the dust from your feet, and it'll be more intolerable for them on the day of judgment than the land of Sodom and Gomorrah. Depart, says Jesus, into everlasting fire. Jesus calls his detractors serpents and a generation of vipers. He promises them a fire that is never quenched. In fact, his attitude is an assurance of everlasting torture. The Gospels are an immoral fraud, and Jesus is not Mr. Nice Guy at all, but an intolerant, vindictive, egotistical bully. Jutteresa of Avila, a Carmelite nun in 16th century Spain. She became famous as a mystic, as a mortifier of her flesh, and as one who experienced Jesus in bodily, though invisible, form, in episodes of religious ecstasy. And it was for these episodes of religious ecstasy that St. Teresa becomes most famous. Here's how she described her encounters with Jesus as she lay alone at night. I saw in his hand a long spear of gold, and at the iron's point there seemed to be a little fire. Jesus appeared to me to be thrusting it at times into my heart, and to pierce my very entrails. When he drew it out, he seemed to draw them out also, and to leave me all on fire with a great love of God. The pain was so great that it made me moan, and yet so surprising was the sweetness of this excessive pain that I could not wish to be rid of it. My soul is satisfied now with nothing less than God. Well, it reminds us all, I'm sure, of that Meg Ryan moment from When Harry Met Sally. Except St. Teresa wasn't faking the ecstasy. On the other hand, it was her lover, Jesus, that was imaginary. Is it any surprise that Christianity draws into itself the lonely hearts and the abandoned? To be unloved, to be denied a focus for the primordial force that impels all life to seek out reproduction, leaves dangling an emptiness, a longing, and an unworldliness which becomes the breeding ground for delusion, mysticism, and religion. The sufferer battles with and punishes his or her physical self, and escapes into a psychotic realm misinterpreted as higher, spiritual, or even heaven itself. Jesus is not merely an imaginary friend, he is also a fantasy lover. The innate human desire for an intimate relationship with another person finds its ultimate fulfillment in union with Christ. Jesus may exist only in the mind of his adoring paramours, but then what object of adoration does not owe more to the self-delusion of the admirer than to the objective excellence of the admired? Unsullied by any compromising physical reality, Jesus transcends our wildest hopes and doe-eyed dreams. His limpid gaze never fades, his hair never thins, his waistline never thickens. Pubescent teenagers, the bereaved, the lost, the lonely, and the chaste, all may find comfort and protection in the God-man's ethereal embrace. His love is unconditional, his fidelity beyond question. Did not this supremely selfless lover suffer agony and death 2,000 years ago, because even then he knew he would love us for all our frailties and failings? His is a love that truly will last forever, a bottomless, infinite, eternal vat of love.
how can reality compete?
Look at a verse that is certainly a contender for being one of the most stupid in the whole of the New Testament, and that's saying something. It's Luke 23:44. Here's how the King James Bible renders the verse. And it was now about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Just to make sure we get that point, the very next verse adds, and the sun was darkened. Imagine that, darkness over the whole earth for 3 hours. Our oldest extant Bible, the Codex Sinaiticus from the 4th century, clarifies that the sun had failed. And the Catholic Jerusalem Bible assures us that the sun had been eclipsed. So here we have a claim in the Gospel of Luke that one of the signs or portents at the crucifixion of Jesus was a darkness affecting the whole earth, lasting for 3 hours and caused by a failure or perhaps an eclipse of the sun. It's quite an extraordinary claim, and even more extraordinary that in the great civilizations of the time, Roman, Persian and Chinese, no one noticed or recorded this startling and frightening event. Now, I suppose an omnipotent God could arrange anything, even worldwide amnesia. But in the normal universe, this verse from Luke is plain stupid on so many different levels. For a start, no eclipse of the sun can last longer than around 7 minutes, so 3 hours is quite a stretch. Christian apologists have always had a struggle to defend the darkness claim. They not infrequently turn to a lunar eclipse, which can last rather longer than a solar eclipse, but actually occurs only at night, to try to justify the gospel's daytime darkness. As an exercise in damage limitation, many translations of the gospel replace all the earth with all the land, with the added inference that only the land of Judea was affected. Even so, many determined defenders of the faith have been reluctant to concede the literal truth of the Gospels. And yet, all the portents of the crucifixion were literary devices, embellishments included to emphasize the cosmic importance of their Jesus tale. Many apologists, both ancient and modern, have insisted that it was a darkness that embraced the whole world. As it happened, chroniclers of the ancient world were very interested in what were considered to be supernatural happenings. Therefore, an unprecedented darkness affecting even part of the earth should have captured their interest. So it is most unfortunate for the Christians that all the important chroniclers of the age recorded not a word. Pliny the Elder, for example, writing 37 books of natural history in the second half of the first century, claimed to have gathered 20,000 facts from the works of 400 authors. And Pliny knew that the sun was immense, that the world was a sphere, and he wrote extensively about eclipses and what he called celestial prodigies. Pliny even wrote chapters on Idumea, Palestinia, Samaria and Judea. Yet nowhere does Pliny speak of the supposed preternatural darkness. Nor is any word of the darkness forthcoming from the noted 2nd century astronomer-geographer of Alexandria, Claudius Ptolemy, whose Almagest was a veritable compendium of ancient knowledge of the heavens, was influential for more than 1,000 years. Nor was the darkness known to Philo, Josephus, Tacitus, Suetonius, or any other luminary whom we might quite reasonably expect to have heard of, or known of any extraordinary darkness, if it was anything other than a religious fable. Unable to garner support from respected authors, yet desperate to justify their crucifixion miracles, early Christian apologists turned to misrepresenting the work of two obscure ancient authors whose writings are no longer extant. Origen of Alexandria, a prolific Christian writer in the first half of the 3rd century, in responding to the charge made in the previous century by the pagan philosopher Celsus that the earthquake and the darkness were a fantastic tale, Origen invoked the name of Phlegon. Now, Phlegon had also lived a century before Origen. He had been a freedman of the Emperor Hadrian, so Origen was not referencing any eyewitness, though evidently Hadrian's servant did write a chronicle. These are the words of Origen in Contra Celsus, and concerning the eclipse in the time of Tiberius Caesar, during whose reign Jesus appears to have been crucified, and about the great earthquakes that happened at that time. Phlegon has also made a record in the 13th or 14th book, I think, of his chronicles. Note that Origen merely asserts vaguely that Phlegon confirmed the Christian claims, but does not quote the words that Phlegon may actually have written. And Origen was no lukewarm Christian. Reputedly, he castrated himself out of fidelity to Jesus and the words of Matthew 19:12. Even Origen argued in his commentary on Matthew that the darkness had affected only Judea, based upon the logic that all the other signs had been local and therefore the darkness was local too. Around the time that Origen was invoking the name of Phlegon, another defender of the faith, Sextus Julius Africanus, was citing his own dead, but even more obscure pagan writer, Thallus. He says, Thallus, in the 3rd book of his histories, explains away the darknesses of eclipse of the sun, unreasonably as it seems to me. However, note again that this quotation, itself only known from the work of a 9th century Byzantine writer, comes from the pen of the Christian Julius Africanus and not the pagan Thallus, and it fails to link that pagan writer with the crucifixion. When Theophilus of Antioch had mentioned Thallus 50 years earlier, the bishop had made no connection between the pagan writer and the darkness of the crucifixion.